see if I remember how to do this. Local programming incentives and rebates for cable blackouts are on the top of the commission's agenda. Audio has started their post-window house cleaning, pirate letters in Jersey and PA, and a friendly reminder to extend those expiring STAs. All of that coming up.
REC, FCC Today, PG Bradley.
This is FCC Today, the podcast for Wireless Wednesday, January 17, 2024. The FCC has announced two Media Bureau-related notices of proposed rulemaking. The Local Programming Incentive NPRM is a part of an initiative by FCC Chairwoman Jessica Rosenworcel to encourage local programming and journalism. Under this proposal, those stations that can demonstrate that they are providing a certain threshold of local programming would get prioritization within the Media Bureau for the processing of assignment of license and renewal applications. In the NPRM, the commission does ask what the definition of local programming should be. This is a proceeding that REC will be watching very closely. Comment and reply comment dates in MB Docket 24-14 will be announced after the NPRM is published in the Federal Register. The FCC has also adopted an NPRM that would allow consumers to receive rebates from cable and satellite providers in the event that they lose certain local channels as a result of a blackout caused by failed negotiations between the cable satellite provider and local broadcast stations or cable networks over retransmission consent or other per-subscriber fees. Comment and reply comment periods in MB Docket 24-20 will be announced after the NPRM is published in the Federal Register. House cleaning is now taking place at the FCC where it comes to the 2023 LPFM window applications. Yesterday, the FCC dismissed 10 applications filed by the controversial Weather Alert Radio Network. This is the group that filed a total of 213 applications, mostly in the southern states and the U.S. Virgin Islands, under the public safety carve-out in the LPFM rules. 9 of the 10 dismissals that took place yesterday involved applications that were previously identified by REC as being mutually exclusive. By rule, an application using the public safety carve-out will be dismissed if it counters competing applications, unless it was designated by the applicant as their one priority application. Today, the FCC has dismissed 18 applications from different applicants. All of these applications included short spacing to co-channel or first adjacent channel facilities, or had a second adjacent channel short spacing for which a waiver was not requested. These applications cannot be amended. Some of these applications are in groups that were previously identified by REC as being mutually exclusive. So far, there has been a total of 32 window applications dismissed, resulting in 17 REC projected MX groups being dissolved, bringing the estimated number of MX groups down to 130. We're expecting a lot more house cleaning to take place before the FCC releases the public notice officially announcing the MX groups, which is expected to take place at the end of this month. Yesterday, Region 1 Enforcement has issued notices of illegal pirate radio broadcasting to two landowners regarding unauthorized operations on their property. A letter went to Feline Vital stating that the New York field office had used direction-finding techniques to determine that unauthorized broadcasting took place from their property on Ivy Street in Newark, New Jersey on 87.9. In a separate notice, Royal Realty LLC was notified of unlicensed operations taking place on 95.3 from a property located on West Broad Street in Hazleton, Pennsylvania. In both letters, Region 1 Regional Director David Dombrowski reminds the property owners that under the Pirate Act, the FCC can issue a fine of up to $2.3 million. Both property owners have 10 days to reply to the letter.
Walk the plank.
A notice of apparent liability for $16,500 has been issued to Shelby Broadcast Associates, LLC, licensee of FM translator W252 Bravo Echo, Tarrant, Alabama, for unauthorized operation under Section 301 of the Communications Act and Section 73.1745 of the rules. Also, for failure to timely file a special temporary authority, or STA, under Section 73.1635 and failure to disclose information under Section 1.17 of the FCC rules. This all goes back to 2015 when former licensee Valleydale Broadcasting LLC filed an application for special temporary authority to operate from a lower height on the same tower but with an increased effective radiated power due to the station's coaxial cable being damaged. The STA was granted on November 20, 2015 and was extended to November 19, 2016. On April 7, 2017, Valleydale filed an application to assign the license to Shelby. On May 12th of that year, while the assignment was still pending, Valleydale filed an application to modify the station's ERP and antenna pattern to resolve an interference issue with WFXQ, Alexander City, Alabama. This application was granted on June 21, 2017. On July 6, 2018, Marble City Media, LLC, licensee of WFXO, filed another interference complaint and argued that the new owner, Shelby, lacked a valid license because the station was not modified to operate with the technical specifications in the modification application. Later that month, on the 19th, Shelby filed another STA, but that application was dismissed because no reason was given for why the STA should be granted. On the 23rd, nearly 3 years after the first STA, Shelby refiled the STA request, stating the reason was the coax cable was still damaged. Marble City filed an informal objection against the STA, claiming that since the station was operating with an unauthorized facility since the previous STA expired in November 2016, that the license had expired under Section 312G of the Communications Act. Marble City would also file similar pleadings against the translator's license to cover application, as well as their application to renew the license. In addition to the 312G argument, Marble City also stated that Shelby should have disclosed the rule violations in their renewal. Shelby would counter that 312G would not apply in this case because while the station was at a different height and power, it was still operated from the same authorized location and channel. In their findings, media staff had determined that the translator has served the public interest with no serious violation or pattern of abuse under Section 309K of the Communications Act. They also stated that Section 312G would not apply in this case since the station did operate from its authorized location and on its authorized channel. Media stated this is different than past cases where operation from an unauthorized location or on an unauthorized channel is no better than silence, which would start the clock under 312G. Media staff did determine that Shelby was operating with an unauthorized facility and had waited nearly 20 months to file another STA request to operate on those facilities through an STA that had to be filed twice. The FCC also found that Shelby also provided false certifications for failing to disclose the rule violations on the renewal application. The total base forfeitures of $23,000 was reduced to $16,500 because the translator facility was a secondary service. As usual, Shelby has 30 days to fight it. FCC Today, the podcast, is available on the Michelle Bradley YouTube channel. Please like and subscribe if you love this kind of stuff. We're also available on Podbean and many other podcast providers. Keep up to date with happenings in the Media Bureau and the rest of the FCC at fcc.today. REC Networks is always on at recnet.com. Follow the LPFM window results and check out our new LPFM knowledge quiz. For now, I am Michelle Bradley, SBE Certified Broadcast Technologist. good night from Riverton.